Okay, good morning. Hope everyone is well. We discussed at length this week in the Chumash here. I don't know if it's posted on the website yet, but we discussed at length Parshas Shlach, all the many messages and the many themes and ideas that are occurring in the Parsha. But I just want to speak about one topic that I didn't discuss in the Chumash here, and I think it's an important message as well. The question is asked, I heard this question b'shem Rabbi Rasner, who asked this question in the name of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. You know, I never saw it in print, but it's a fascinating question. And the question is that the sin of the Meraglim was not the first time Klal Yisrael sinned, and sadly not the last time Klal Yisrael sinned. Yet he points out that when Klal Yisrael sinned at the Chet Egel, Moshe was able to obtain Slicha V'Kapara on their behalf. Yet when it came time for the Meraglim, it seems like there was no Slicha V'Kapara available, and everyone that was involved in it died, and the entire generation had to be killed out and did not merit Eretz Yisrael. So ask Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, why was there no option, why was there no availability for tshuva like we have by the Chet Egel? And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz gives a very important answer, which I think is relevant for our attitude towards Eretz Yisrael. He says that not being allowed into Eretz Yisrael wasn't as much a punishment as it is what I would call a reality. Meaning, if you don't want Eretz Yisrael, then we're not going to bring you into Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is a treat. If you don't want it, then we're not going to let you come in. So therefore, it wasn't so much as a punishment. It was more that Eretz Yisrael is here if you want it, if you appreciate it, if you value it, if you understand it. If you tell me that Eretz Yisrael has all these flaws and all these problems, then don't do me any favors. I don't need you to come into Eretz Yisrael. That was the answer Rabbi Rasner said over in the name of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. But I would like to give a different spin on it based on another yesod that I heard from another person. I heard this from Rabbi Wagner. I heard this word from him. And he quotes a Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma asks, what was the svara of the Meraglim? Why did the Meraglim do what they did? So he quotes the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma says, because the Meraglim knew that Moshe Rabbeinu was not going to enter into Eretz Yisrael. And they were afraid that all the miracles that they saw up till now were only because of Moshe. And therefore they were convinced if they're not going to have Moshe with them in Eretz Yisrael, that they will not be successful. Even though, because the question is, how can the Meraglim not believe Hashem could defeat anyone and anything? They saw Kriyas Yam Suf, they saw Mechamas Amalek, they saw Eser Makas. So what was the answer? It says the Meshech Chachma, because they thought all that was B'schus Moshe. And because Moshe would not be around when they go into Eretz Yisrael, they wouldn't see all those miracles. That's what I heard B'shem the Meshech Chachma. So I want to suggest that these two questions perhaps can answer each other. Maybe the flaw of the Meraglim was different than the flaw of the Chet Egel. Chet Egel, the Ran in Drushes, the Ran has a kasha. The Ran wants to know why is it that Avraham Avinu was so makbid on who his kids married. He said, my kids cannot marry anyone from a certain land, but it's okay if my kids marry idol worshippers. What's the pshat? So the Drushes, the Ran writes that Avodah Zarah is something you can overcome. It's a taiva. You can work on it, you can be trained to overcome Avodah Zarah. But what writes the drushes around, but something like bad midos, which is Avraham Avinu did not want any of his children marrying into, that is something that can't be fixed. So maybe that's the answer here also. The mistake of the Meraglim was they didn't believe in themselves. They didn't believe in their own capabilities and abilities. They believe their whole koiches comes from Moshe Rabbeinu. If a person lacks the realization of his own abilities, you can't fix that. And that maybe now you could with therapy. But back then, that was an incurable machla. If a person doesn't believe that he's great and he can accomplish great things, there's no future for such a people. These people can't go into Eretz Yisrael. You need to believe that you can accomplish amazing things. If we have a whole generation of people who think, I can't do anything because I'm not this, I'm not that, and I'm bound by my situation, or I'm bound by my family, or I'm bound by whatever, you can't accomplish anything like that. And therefore, perhaps, the Meraglim, different than Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah can be cured. Avodah Zarah says the drushes around, you can work on. You can sit a person down and explain to him how these idols don't make any sense and God runs the world, and you can explain it to them. But maybe if a person lacks what we call today the realization of his own ability that he can accomplish great things irrelevant to the world around him, that is a basic character flaw that perhaps cannot be fixed. That's one idea. And I think the other idea perhaps is that the whole story of the Meraglim taught B'nai Yisrael that they forgot an essential lesson. The B'nai Yisrael have been hearing since the get-go the importance of getting into Eretz Yisrael. This is all about going into Eretz Yisrael. Meaning they kept on looking at the future. They had a goal and idea. And the moment the Meraglim shook that up and they said, nah, different plan. We're not going into Eretz Yisrael. Instead, we're going to stay here. They took their eye off the prize. And we as Jews always have to have this, our eye on what our prize is. What's our end result? What's our final destination? It has to be Eretz Yisrael. It has to be Geula. If we lose sight on what our final destination is, and then we're in big trouble. The Meraglim caused Bnei Yisrael to lose sight about what we really want at the end of the day. Yes, the Midbar had a nice situation. The Mun was nice. You didn't have to work. You got to learn. It was all great. But at the end of the day, this wasn't what we wanted. We wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael. We wanted to have, you know, the way it was supposed to be. And it's an important lesson for life because very often we lose sight on what's really important. We get so many things that pop up along our way, we lose sight on what's really, really important. Now, the last couple of weeks, many people have been discussing the idea of moving out of America and moving to Eretz Yisrael because of the situation in America. It's a very loaded question, and the situation in America is quite scary. We now allow a country to allow mob riots to run and to control. It is scary. But I don't know if necessarily making Aliyah out of fear is the right reason to make Aliyah either. But I ask the people that are discussing to make Aliyah, I just have a basic question. Did anyone daven for Mashiach? Or were just booking tickets and renting apartments in Eretz Yisrael? Again, moving to Eretz Yisrael to itself is not the answer. The answer is the Geula. The answer is Mashiach's arrival. Now yes, if you're in Eretz Yisrael, you'll already be one step closer. Or perhaps to fulfill a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, as we spoke about in Halacha Shir. But that's still not the end result. The end result is the Geula. The end result is Mashiach. So we have to not lose sight of what's really our final destination, is Mashiach's arrival. So with all the craziness in the world, I would suggest to all those people, daven a little bit more for Mashiach to come. Because that's the way we're going to get out of this whole mess. It's going to be with Mashiach's coming, not necessarily which country we run to. So if we really, you know, want to make a difference in the world, and I think we do, and it's a mitzvah which is incumbent upon all of us to be mitzvah polisha, we have an obligation to anticipate Mashiach's arrival. So I think at the time when things get nervous and scary, and they are, and they should be, we're living very scary times as an American and as a Jew in America. We need to not lose sight of what's going to get us out of this, and that's going to be the ultimate geula. We also find an interesting message from Rebbe Avadia Yosef. And I think it's also much connected to the world we're living in today. Rebbe Avadia Yosef says, at the end of the day, the biggest bracha Klal Yisrael got was not going into the Midbar right after Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why, says Rebbe Avadia Yosef? He says, because if we would have went into the Midbar right after, instead of the 40 years we wandered, we would all be a bunch of Amaratzim. Why? Because the moment we moved into Eretz Yisrael, we had no more time to learn. Right away, we had to start working the land. We had to start living a normal world, a normal life. So says Rebbe Avadia, perhaps in retrospect, the biggest bracha that the Jewish people got at that time was the fact that they didn't go into Eretz Yisrael right away. Because they first got stuck, so to say, in the Midbar. That allowed them, that gave them the flexibility to be able to learn undisturbed, not having to worry about Parnassah, not having to worry about all the other things, and they were able to really just focus on learning the Torah. Because when else would they have time to learn? There's so much to learn in the world of Torah, and not always do they, once they moved into Eretz Yisrael, they'd be so busy with the land and busy planting and busy fighting and all these other things, they just wouldn't have time to learn. And I think this is a message that we need to hear often, that, you know, we're living in very trying times. You know, no one really knows. Baruch Hashem, I think almost all our shuls are open on some capacity. You know the shuls are open because at least by me in Queens, the guys came around collecting stock again. So now I know the shuls are opened. Now, I don't think that's right, but that's a different shmooze for a different time. Whatever. I don't want to get into all the different communities that are doing different things right or wrong. That's another topic that bothers me a lot. But I spoke about it in the Chumash here, about we still have to abide by the laws, even if we don't like the laws. You know, I understand that the camps are closed, and I understand the parks. I get it all. Trust me, I have kids. But I don't think that's a heter to be a mazik or a heter to do things that are illegal. And I think for more than anything, I think it's very poor chinuch to tell our kids that, you know, the government says we're not allowed to open sleepaway camps, but we're going to open sleepaway camps anyways because we don't care. How do you expect to raise a child where you tell them that it's okay to break the law when you don't like what the law says? And then 15 years later, when this kid grows up and he's doing something in business and he doesn't like the tax code or he doesn't like the other law, and he says, well, I remember as a kid, my parents said, if you don't like the laws, you just break them. I think it's a horrific message to teach our children that if you don't like laws, you don't have to keep them. And that's what many people are telling us. Many of these, oh, don't worry, you don't like the law, it's okay. It's not fair. Listen, you want to file a lawsuit? I think that's great. We are filing a lawsuit. Hopefully we'll win or get something out of it. I don't know. But just to break the law because you don't like the law, I think is illegal. I think it's keneged Torah. And I think it's a terrible message for our children. That our children hear from us that it's okay to break laws when you don't like the law. Or the law doesn't go your way. Or it doesn't fit your wants and wishes. I it bothers me a lot. But in any case, when we think about and we look back over the months that we were Nebuch locked out of shul, maybe there was some good of this. Who knows? Right? Every time that Kosh Baruch Hu does something, even the Chet HaMeraglim, which kept us in the Midbar for 40 extra years, was a Teyelis. I have my own svar. Again, I have no proof to this, but who knows? Right? If we all remember that right before Corona, we were all very nervous about the security of our shuls. And we all were tumbling with security guards in Nebuch, there were shootings. Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu locked down our shuls to keep us safe. Who knows? I don't know. I'm not a Navi, nor am I saying that I know, but I'm just throwing out this idea from this week's parasha that even though the Chet Meraglim was horrific and it set Klal Yisrael back 40 years, says Rav Avad Yosef, but Lamaisa, in retrospect, it was perhaps the biggest matana for them. It allowed them to be able to learn Torah a little bit more. And then we'll just wrap up with a very beautiful Sforno at the end of the parasha. Sforno writes that the mitzvah of tzitzis is keneged all the other mitzvahs. And the Sforno explains that the mitzvah of tzitzis is like our armor. It's like our dress code that we wear to show that we're in the army of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? We all wear a uniform. Everyone wears a uniform. What's our uniform? Our uniform is the tzitzis. That shows that we belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, that's why it's equivalent to all the mitzvahs of Hashem. This is our reminder, our constant reminder, how we belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're in His army. We need to serve Him. We need to work for Him. But I wanted just to leave off with one last idea, that the Torah tells us about Kalev, one very important word about Kalev. The Torah calls Kalev Avdi, the Avdi Kalev. How did Kalev have the strength to overcome the Nisayan? The answer is because Kalev looked at himself as an Eved. What's an Eved? Not a slave in the derogatory way where it's thrown around in modern day terms. A slave is someone who doesn't ask questions of his master. He does what he's told and he doesn't ask to understand why. Kalev said to himself, I'm an Eved of Hashem. I do what Hashem tells me. I come back and I report and I do exactly what I'm told and I don't ask questions. I don't say, I bought this, that, and the other. That's not my job. When was the last time you allowed the janitor in the big meetings in the company, when you're having your big meetings with the CEOs and all the big hotshots, do you allow the janitor in to give his 2 cents about the opinion? No one. Because you say, what do you know? You're the janitor. Says Kalev, what do I know about Hashem's master plan of the world? What do I know? I'm just a lonely Eved. And therefore, the idea of being an Eved really enables us to remind ourselves of what our purpose in this world is, not to try to always understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but more just to fulfill His wishes and to fulfill His ways and not to ask so many questions. Last time I checked, Hashem never asked me my advice for the running of the world. I'm not anticipating that's going to change anytime soon. So we just need to accept this role in our lives, that we're not here to try to understand, to try to logically explain the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're here to accept the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and realize that all that He does for us is ultimately for our benefit. Mitzvah Hashem, this Tuesday night we're going to be continuing on our discussion in Berachas HaGoyimel, but today we're going to be focusing on children and women. Whether or not children and women have to recite Goyimel, very relevant for many people who, first of all, who fly. If you go travel with your wife, you have to figure out if she has to bench Goyimel. And also for those that were Nebuch sick in Corona and hopefully recovered, should they bench Goyimel as well? Bli Neder, we'll discuss that in Mitzvah Hashem this Tuesday night. Okay, today's learning should be L'Zchus before Shleim before David.
Chaya Rachel Nechama.
Yeah.
Bas Altahud Zizisel.
Right, and the other name?
And Peril Yenta.
Peril
Bas Brinda.
Okay.
And also, if you could repeat this one, we have a good friend who's going in for surgery this week. It should be Nesklus for Esther Sora Bas Chaya Pesel.
Okay. As well as Soich Shar Charli Yisrael, all that need a refuah. Before we move on to the new sugya, I just want to go back for a second to what we talked about with Metzitza Bepeh a few weeks ago. We mentioned that there was a letter written by the Chassam Sofer, where the Chassam Sofer was addressed by a student of his about doing Metzitza in a case where it perhaps is dangerous. Now, I was reading the biography of the Chassam Sofer over Shabbos, and it hit me somewhat strange. The Chassam Sofer was a moyel for many, many years. He was a well-known moyel. The Chassam Sofer even debated at the time with doctors who were trying to convince him that Mila is dangerous for babies. And the Chassam Sofer showed the doctor how Mila actually, the babies that had Mila lived longer than the babies who didn't have Mila. So it's a little funny, if you remember in that letter, the Chassam Sofer never mentioned that he's a Moyel. He never used his, you know, Moyel background. The Maram Shik did. When the Maram Shik was fighting against Metzitza, he always wrote, I'm a Mila, I was a Moyel, and I know it never affects it. It's interesting. Again, I'm not saying it's a kasha. I'm just throwing it out from a historical standpoint. I find it interesting that the Chassam Sofer was a well-known moyel, and he debated Mila in his time, yet he made no mention of it in his letter. Could be he didn't need to, because he was writing it to his Talmud, and his Talmud knew that he was a moyel, so he didn't have to mention it to him. But it's just an interesting point of knowledge, that when the Chassam Sofer discusses Mila, he was a well-known moyel. It was interesting that the Chassam Sofer would never do the Priya. He would only do the Chaticha. He would always do the cutting, but he wouldn't do the pulling back. He said his nails were so shvach, he couldn't do the pulling back. So he always did just the chaticha. But he was definitely well-versed in Mila, because he was a Moel, and he would definitely know the ins and outs of Mila. Yet he doesn't mention that or reference that anywhere, because again, it wasn't really relevant to the question that he was asked. He was asked about a certain Moel that was spreading disease, so his answer was, yeah, if the Moel spreading disease is dangerous. Now, he never wrote like the Maram Shik wrote, like, I never saw this and this and that. He just wrote, yeah, if that's the case, if the Moel spreading disease, and then it's dangerous. But just from a historical standpoint, it is worth mentioning that the Chasam Sofer was a well-known Moel. Okay, so back over here in the Gemara, tells us a bunch of statements from Abaya. Amar Abaya, Omri li ein, my mother told me. And we mentioned last time, Abaya did not have a mother. Abaya was orphaned from childbirth. Abaya's father died when his mother was pregnant with him. His mother died in childbirth, and he had no siblings. Abaya was raised by his uncle. His uncle was Rabbi Bar Nachmeni, was his uncle who raised him. I mentioned that Rabbi Bar Wine gives a fascinating shiur on Abaya and Rava's life. So in that shiur, he has two pshatim in Rishonim, if Abaya's name was really Abaya or was really something else. But whatever the case is, we always know him as Abaya. So when he says Omri li ein, he doesn't mean my mother, he means my aunt, Rabbi Bar Nachmeni's wife, taught him all these interesting medical things. And he learned a lot from her. He picked up a lot of medical knowledge from his aunt, Rabbi Bar Nachmeni's wife. So the Gemara tells us, Abaya Omri li ein. Abaya said from his mother, meaning his aunt, Hayanuka de sumuk. If you have a baby that's sumuk, that the blood did not yet settle, didn't yet absorb in the baby. The baby is somewhat reddish. So the Gemara said, Abaya said, Lirsi chile ad ivla badma. You should wait until the blood gets absorbed. Vilamhule, and then you should give the baby a bris. The yoruk, if the baby is greenish, or what we call today more like an orangey yellow. But again, Rav Shmuel Vazda points out that this is not the jaundice that we talk about today. This is perhaps something else. Vakati le'nofel be'dmaya. Again, the blood did not yet settle, or the baby doesn't have blood. Lirsichi ad nofel be'damye v'lamule. You should also wait until the baby gets proper blood, and then you should do the miss. The tani, because we learned in the Brice. Amar Rav Nosson. Pamachas alachti lekarkeyam. One time, Rav Nosson said the story, he was traveling by one of the beach villages. Ubasa isha achas lefanai. And one lady came in front of me. Shemala b'no rishon. She gave a bris to her first son. Now, this is what I want to get to with Mr. Shemor next week, about the status of women in bris mila. Can a lady be a moel? We never really talked about that enough when we so far in this perek, but we need a little bit at the end of today's shir, and predominantly more in tomorrow's shir, we'll get into this. Obviously, what many people are thinking, that we know a lady can be a moel from Tzipora. Pasuk Chumash, Tzipora did a bris mila. So if it was good enough for Tzipora, why can't it be good enough for us? So we will discuss it, both in Lomdis and Halacha, about the status of a woman being a mile. But over here, it sounds like this lady did a mila. It says, Ubasa Isha lo achas, the lady came in front of me, Shemola ben Arishan. She gave a bris to her son. So the Shach already says, no, it doesn't mean she actually gave the bris. It means, people say my son had a bris. It doesn't mean you were the mile. It means that I was involved with the bris. I hired the mile, whatever the case may be. So what happened with this story? So her first kid had a bris. Umeis and the baby died. Shani, she had a second son. Umeis and he died. Shlishi, this is the third baby. Heviyasi lefanei. I'm getting the third baby. Reb Nosson was the one that was presented with the third baby after two brothers already died. Ve'ri'is yeshu adam. I looked at the baby. I saw the baby. It was a ready complexion. Red. Amartila, I told him, Teini lo, why don't you wait at she'iv labadam? Why don't you wait a little bit until the baby's blood gets more absorbed and it'll be healthier? So taka him teini. She waited until the blood got absorbed. She gave the baby a bris v'chaya, and the baby lived. Rebbe Shemayfis, it worked. And they named the baby after me. That's how they were so moved, they were so touched. But what I did for them, they named the baby after me. Okay.
The baby wasn't red, there's not a problem.
Good. So we're going to have to talk about why is this not a simple case of Mesa Achim Machmas Mila. We have a halacha that if the brothers die before, the third baby doesn't get a bris mila. So what was going on over here? So we'll see. It's machlokes achrayim. How to learn this gemara? We'll come back to it hopefully in a few minutes. Then the gemara tells us another story. Shuv pamachas halachti the medinos kaputkia. He went on another trip. Uba isha achas lefanai. And the same story. Another lady came. Shemola benar rishoyin. She gave a bris to her first son. Umeisin nevach the baby died. Shnia the second baby. Umeisin the second baby died. Shlishi evyasa the funer viisi shuhu yaruk. I saw the baby was green. So he tzatzti ba. So what I did over here was I made a little incision into the baby, and I looked into it, v'lo re'isi ba dambris. And I saw that the baby pashas doesn't have enough blood. Amarti la, I told the mother, himteni la chiyibo boy doma, wait till the blood falls down. The himteni la, she waited, umoloi, so she gave the baby bris, v'choyah, and the baby live, while you carry no shmoy nas and ababli al shmi, and they named the baby after me. Now, we mentioned last week, and we really had a whole share in it, so I'm not going back into it, that Rashi learned...
What's the Gemara's kind of obsession with the fact that it's the mother involved in all these stories?
Oh, very good. So we're going to see that there's a machloikis achrayim and rishayim. What happens if we come from the father's side? We're going to talk about it, actually. That you see, and that's a very good dig that the achrayim make. That it's always the mother. So is that because we can perhaps suspect that this blood issue is a mother-based issue versus if it comes from the father? Now, this might be a genetic question. We'll see. It's actually machloikis machabin ramon shulchan aruch. We'll come back to it hopefully in a few minutes. But that's a very good diuk about why it's always the mother, the one who's involved, and not so much the father. Rashi told us on this Gemara that the reason why you can't do the bris with a baby who's yaruk is two problems. First of all, the baby doesn't have proper bleeding, and therefore the baby can die. And secondly, zok Rashi, because you can't do atavas dam bris. Since this baby doesn't have enough blood, if you're going to cut, no blood's going to come out. So we mentioned that this Rashi is very yisaidistic in the Sugya, and Moshe Paskin, based on this Rashi, that every bris milah needs to have blood come out of it. If you can do a bris milah where no blood comes out, you're not yetzer the mitzvah. That was Ramosha's chiddush based on this Rashi. That Rashi said that part and parcel of the mitzvah of bris milah is not just to cut off the skin, but bleeding blood has to come out. That's what we know today as a toughest dam bris. Blood has to come out. And we ended off in last week's share explaining that's why milah b'shabbos is an issur d'oraisa. We had a kasha that if the whole issur milah, if milah b'shabbos is usur, why? Because it's sheichet, because you're causing blood to come out. I don't want the blood to come out. I really just want to cut off the foreskin. The blood coming out is merely a byproduct. That should be like a melacha shenet tzvich l'gufa. So we answer, and then no, according to this, it's kishmak. Because you want the blood to come out. Because that's part of the mitzvah is for the blood to come out. Without the blood coming out, you didn't fully complete the mitzvah. Okay, that's this Gemara. Now, this Gemara seems like more of like an agadita Gemara, not like a Gemara we should spend too much time on. But there is quite some interesting issues that come out from this Gemara that need a little bit of a discussion. First of all, there's a Gemara number two, a Gemara in Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin. About three blot away from where we're up to. So you figure we'll get there by the next Siyam HaShas. So the Gemara writes like this. Talk to the Gemara, Omar Shmuel, Choltso Soy Chamo, if a baby has a fever, Noithlim Lo Kol Zayin Lahavrosa. If you have a baby that never has a fever, Zog to Gemara, you have to wait another 7 days from when the baby gets better. This is like the Gemara. If you have a baby that gets sick, you have to wait a full 7 days from when the baby gets better before you can do the bris milah. So now there's a couple of questions over here. First of all, why? And second of all, would you do that in our Gemara also? The Gemara told us about these babies that have apparently a blood condition. Would these babies have to wait 7 days from when the bleeding gets fixed? Or they would know. The moment the bleeding gets fixed, they go have the milah right away. So if you look in Shulchan Aruch number 3, the Mechaber writes in Hilchos Milah, Choyle, if you have a baby that's sick, you don't give the baby a bris until it gets better. But you have to wait 7 days from when the baby gets better. You can't just go straight into the bris. Then you give the baby the bris. That's Shmuel's din. You have to wait 7 days. Now, we don't yet know why you have to wait 7 days, but that's what the Gemara says. Says the Shulchan Aruch b'medvar remurim shachotzase chamuk yaitzibot. That's only if it has fever or acholi shebacholaguf. It has something mamish wrong with it. If it has a problem with one of the body parts, had a small eye pain, then you wait till it gets better. So the Shulchan Aruch is clearly telling us that this din of waiting 7 days is limited to certain medical situations. It has to be that the baby has something that affects his whole body. So the question is, what is this blood issue in our sugya? Would that be considered a choyle kol guf? Or would that be considered a choyla be'everech? So if you look in Shulchan Aruch,
Shmuel gives is this a halachic psak he's giving, or is it as medical advice? Okay. I mean, Shmuel was a doctor.
So we're going to see in 2 seconds, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger and the Binyan Tzion class that for a chakira. If Shmuel is coming from a halachic angle, or is he coming from a medical angle? And obviously the nafkamina would be how it plugs back into our sugya. So if you look in Shulchan Aruch in Yeridei number 4, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Im nimtza edayim, if you find a baby that's very red, which is a sign that the blood did not absorb yet, ella oid lebasser, ella, let me just read it over here, ella bein or lebasser, but instead the blood is still between the skin and the flesh, whatever that means exactly, then the emolinoise at sheyivalobadomai. You can't give the baby a bris until the blood gets absorbed. says the Mashmoy said the Mechaber that you have to wait 7 days, you don't have to wait 7 days. It sounds like from the Mechaber that you don't have to wait 7 days. It says, you just wait until the Yivla Badomai. And the Mashmoy says, once it's Yivla Badomai, you go straight ahead. So the Pashtus would be in the Mechaber is that when it comes to this bleeding issue, this blood deficiency, whatever you want to call it, there's no din that you have to wait 7 days. It's more like eye pain. It's not like a case of Choyle Kol Gufa. Now, I just want to read to you the end of this Mechaber because we need to come back to it. Says the Mechaber, you have to be very careful with all these things. You should not give a bris to a baby that has a potential of danger. Because sakonas nefoshes beats at everything. Why, Dr. Mechaber, quoting a Rambam, you can always do the bris milah later. But you can never bring back a Jewish life. Very poetic, but the obvious kash is, why did the Mechaber need this? You know why? The answer is because pikuach nefesh toicha everything. Why did the Mechaber give us this shtickle Torah? You know why you delay the bris milah? Because you can always do the bris milah later. You can't always bring back a nefesh. That's not the reason. The reason is because we have a rule, and we learned this rule very, very clearly this last couple of months. Pikuach nefesh toicha everything. If anyone learned anything from Corona, we learned that Pikuach Nefesh is the most important thing in our lives. In the mitzvah of a Chai Behem, to stay safe, is one of the most important mitzvahs. So why is Mechaber giving me this whole fancy shtickle Torah over here? That the reason why I don't do the bris right away is because I can always do the bris later, but I can't bring back the person if I accidentally killed him. Who needs that? The simple answer should be, Pikuach Nefesh trumps everything, end of story, nothing more to talk. So B'li Neder will come back to the Achrayim who deal with this kasha of why the Mechaber wrote what he wrote. But again, he's basically cutting and pasting from Aram. But back to our sugya. The question that we started off with is the din of Tamtona Zayin Yomim true for the blood deficiency or not? So the pashas of the Mechaber would sound like, no. It would sound like from the Mechaber that no, you would give this baby a bris immediately. And that's perhaps the pashas of the Gemara. The Gemara also sounds like that. The Gemara says you wait till the baby gets the blood is balua, then it says umol anoise, then you give the bris milah. So the simple reading of the Gemara would be mashma that you give the bris immediately. You don't have to wait 7 days. But what's this 7 day waiting all about? So if you look in the Binyan C in the number 5 of Yaakov Ettlinger, he clears an interesting shaila. He clears the following scenario: let's say you have a baby that was born, and on the third day of its birth, he runs a very, very high fever, very dangerous. And then the fever breaks, baby's back to normal. Now it's day 4. Do I still have to wait 7 days? Because maybe the din of Shmuel was only the din when you have a baby that's already shaloi bismanoi, you have a baby that got sick, and by the time the baby gets better, it's already after day 8, so now it's already shaloi bismanoi. So then maybe once it's already shaloi bismanoi, so then Shmuel kicks in a din that you have to kick in an extra 7 days for the health of the baby. But would Shmuel even say wait 7 days at the expense of mila bismanoi? And the baby got sick on day 3. Now it's day 4. So now if you apply the din of Shmuel, the baby's going to have a bris milah on day 11. That's milah shloi bismanoi. Is the din of Shmuel even in a case that where it would affect milah bismanoi? Or the din of Shmuel is only in a case where there's no issue of milah bismanoi? So cleared the binyan scene for such a shayla. So he writes in number 5. I was asked, imatinik nachlo, if the baby gets sick, but it gets better within the 8 days, you still have to wait 7 days for when the baby got better? Maybe you'll say, no, since it happened within the 8 days, this baby was never yet royal amila. So maybe if only if the baby got sick, and then already he's out of the ballpark of Yom HaShemini, so then we kick in, so then you wait 7 days. So says the Binyan Sin, to answer this kash, we have to ask a basic fundamental question. Where does this come from? Where did Shmuel pull this din out that when a baby gets better, you have to wait 7 days? Claire de Biakavet and Lager, is this halacha Moshe Sinai? Shenoisin lezayin yomim lahavrosai? That is a din? Halacha Moshe Sinai? Halacha, you have to wait 7 days for when the baby gets better. Oi, im takonis chachamu. Or it's merely just that takonis chazal. Chazal instituted that to make sure, since the baby went through some serious illnesses, we want to make sure the baby's clearly out of danger. So we wait 7 days.
Rabbi, I hate to interrupt with today's current events, but yeah. to me, does anybody use this Gemara for the whole thing about Corona and the different shittas of how long you have to wait and when you start counting? Does anyone use this as a reference?
Again, it might be different. Again, if it's halacha Moshe Sinai, then it might be something connected. It might have to do with Bris Milah. And even if it's not...
Yeah, but isn't it also the din of Pekuach Nefesh?
Oh, yeah, clearly it's Pekuach Nefesh. The question just is I don't know if babies and other illnesses have necessarily run the same status. Maybe because you're going to do a procedure to the baby afterwards, you want to make sure that the baby has no shemets of danger left in it. That's just my assumption. I don't know if this is necessarily the idea of infectious diseases that last for 7 days.
Yeah, I mean, because it just sounds very similar. That's what I'm saying. Like,
again, Pashup Shad is, you learn it's the Kanas Chazal. It's just merely a precautionary measure to make sure the baby has no illness in it when you're going to do the Mila. So, L'chaira, we can say...
Rabbi.
Yes.
It would be Alach L'Mashe Misinai to wait 7 days. Then, even if it's Shabbos on the 7th day, you should be mechuyev to do it, even though it's not Bismamek.
Okay, very good. They talk about that. That's one of the nafkaminas that they mention in this Chakir of the Binyan Tzim, is what happens if we fall out on Shabbos. Yeah, maybe we'll talk about it. Yeah, that's one of the nafkaminas, depending on how you learn.
That way, because we don't do it. 100%.
So he writes like this. He writes, V'yesh nafkus b'zeh. Zohar Rabbi Yaakov Ellinger is a nafkamina. Im yesh litchois, al yidem tana zayin yom. He says, my case is the nafkamina. Zohar again, Rabbi Yaakov Ellinger clears the chakira. Why do we wait 7 days? Is it because takonas chazal for the baby's benefit? Or is it halacha mesh b'sinai? Says Rabbi Yaakov Ellinger, what's the nafkamina? My case. Why? He wants to suggest that if it's Mila Takanas Chazal, maybe Chazal wouldn't do that in a case where it's going to cause you to lose out on Mila Bezmane. I mean, Chazal made a Takana to be extra careful, to be extra safe. Yeah, that's when you already missed Mila Bezmane. So now, no, wait another 7 days. But if you're holding now that the baby got better before 8 days, so now you're going to lose Mila Bezmane because of this, says the Yaakov Ellinger, not logical. Maybe they were never misakin a din that's going to cause you to lose that. But if it's halacha Moshe Sinai, you're stuck. Halacha Moshe Sinai says every baby after he gets better has to wait 7 days. I have no choice. That's one nafkamina. Another nafkamina l'chayv would be, is what would happen if you didn't listen to the doctors? You decided to give the mila toich zayin. Would the mila be invalidated? Or would it still be valid? So if you remember on our first year, which was 70 shiurim ago, today's our 71st year in Rav Loz Demila, we spoke about the famous shach. The shach discusses a shayla based on a rush. If you don't do the bris if you do the bris before 8 days, is it a kosher with bris or not? We had a whole bunch of shiurim about that. So let's say similar shayla over here. Let's say you decide not to wait the 7 days. Would the bris be invalid? So it depends. If it's halacha Moshe Mesinai, you won't yaitz in a bris. Or again, it might be like doing a bris before Shemini. But if it's just a Takanas Chazal, so it's not likely that Takanas Chazal will invalidate the Mila. You didn't listen to Chazal, okay, so you're a bad person. But you didn't make the bris invalidated. So l'chayr, there's a couple of nafkaminas l'halacha based on this chakira of the Binyan Tzion. Now, the Binyan Tzion himself brings an interesting raya. He brings a raya like this. He says, l'chayr ha'yinir li, the dasa rosh he medar abonim. He brings a raya from the rush in Shabbos that it's a dinder abonim. Why? Because the Gemara has a shayla, when you wait the 7 days, how do you calculate the 7 days? Is it me'es l'es? Is it mamish, 24 hours or not? How do you calculate it? And the Gemara doesn't come out with a psak of how to calculate it. And the Rosh says over there that since you have to go l'chumra, why do you have to go l'chumra, Zakti Rosh? Because sakonis nefashis, you have to go l'chumra. He writes over here, loy nafshim, mekom haka paskin l'chumra, shum desafin nefashis l'hokam. So he says like this, 1 second. Fred of Yaakov Ellinger, if this din of Hamtona is a din deraisa, that's why you have to go to Chumra. Because it's a din deraisa. It must be Zok to Yaakov Ellinger, it's taken out a din deraisa. It's only a din derabbanon. And therefore, the only reason we have to go machmir is because it's Pekuach Nef, it's Hakonos Nefashos. So Zok to Yaakov Ellinger, Chabarai from the Rosh, that's only a din derabbanon. Now, he ends up concluding not like that. He concludes at the end of the tshuva that he disagrees. He thinks it's taka din deraisa. That you have to wait, and he holds, even if the baby gets better within the 8 days, you also have to wait 7 days. It's halacha l'moshe Mesinai. So now, let's go back to our question. Our question was, did this din apply to our case also? So again, it might depend. What was included in the halacha l'moshe Mesinai? If included in the halacha l'moshe Mesinai was any case of a baby that has ailments, so then this should be included. If the halacha l'moshe Mesinai was specifically for a baby that had something that was what's called a chayla kol gufa, maybe not. If it's a Takanas Chazal, so then the Chayr, it's more logical that it should be included. Because if it's just a Takanas Chazal, just for the benefit of the baby, so you have to sit down with the doctors and figure out what the doctors say is equivalent to this type of an illness. So the Chayr, it should be a Shtikl Toloi in the lumbus of the din to be able to know whether or not it applies to our Gemara as well. If you look in the bottom, in the Me'iri, in Kuf Lamed Zayin, the Me'iri writes before, she writes, Katan Chayle, Eimol Anoyser Ad She'ivra. You have a cotton that gets sick, you don't give him a bristle, it gets better. Ratzalaymar, she is chazik michulashes hachayli. He gets stronger from his weakened state of sickness. Upir shebi gemara, shebechayli shel kol haguf. It has to be, it takes over his whole body, and kadechas ki yetzibah. Then, noisin lo shivas yom bimeis leis, achish nisrap manachayli. Avul och soy ke'ev be'enoi, if he has eye pain, oy be'echam nevram, let's say he has an ear infection. Eimam tinoloi ad sheyivro, bilvad, then you just have to wait till it gets better. Then he quotes our Gemara. He quotes our Gemara. So clearly the Me'iri learned that our Gemara is not considered a chayli kol guf. Our Gemara is not a disease that affects the whole body, and therefore would not need to be waited on for 7 days. Believe it or not, the stipler, the Kiel's Yankiv, in number 9 on the left side, he has a whole shtickle about this in the Sefer, the stipler. He quotes over here, B'Sefer Yarak Tana. Hilchos Mila Kosab, the Mistavra de Vinan Gamba Odom Yorok, Lahampton Shivayam, Meis Lais, Achashanasak, Cholaktana. He quotes the Yarak Tana, who says, no, you have to wait for the red or the orange babies, you gotta wait 7 days also. He writes, the Shamati, Shabachuvas Beis Yitzchok, I saw from the Yitzchok Shmelkis, Gamkin Hor Lahampton Zain Yom. He also says you have to wait 7 days. Which again, the Chayr is not the Pashas of the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch, and it's not what the Me'iri says. Now again, most of these Acharyim probably didn't have the Me'iri, but the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch that we started off with number 4 does not sound that you have to wait 7 days for the babies that have the blood deficiency. And then he writes...
Do we hold this weight?
I'm not sure, because again, I don't know if what the Gemara's blood deficiency is, what we call today jaundice. So you'd have to really discuss it with a pediatrician or a moyle to know if what the Gemara means over here is the exact same situation that we have today with our babies. If Shmuel Vosner writes it's not, then when the Gemara calls the baby orange or gold or green, it doesn't mean what we call today jaundice. So I don't know exactly where we stand from a medical point, but at least from a lumnish standpoint, he quotes over here from many Acharim that think that this has the same status, which again... Yesh Laden. I would have argued that this is like, I'm not sure. It's not clear from the Gemara what would happen if you'd give this baby a bris. It sounds like the baby would be in sakana, so it sounds like it's a chayil that engulfs the whole body. So if it's a chayil that engulfs the whole body, then the chayil, we should apply the din of Shmuel. But he brings a right from the gun. Yeah.
I had a grandson that at the day of his bris, the mother saw an eye infection and pushed it off 1 week. That was only a few years ago.
Really? Look at that. And Mama Shasugya. I guess, again, so the truth is, I stopped earlier, but the Ramah talks more about eye infections, and he discussed that eye infections could perhaps be a reason to push off a bris. But now you understand why he did it. That's his Gemara. That when you have a chash, something, you have to push it off. Very, very interesting. Okay, halach l'maisa. But again, that's his din of Shmuel, which either, according to the Rabbi Yaakov Ettinger, is either halach l'maisa m'sinai, or it's taka a din in just precautionary measures for the baby. And then again, the moyer will have to decide based on what he feels is considered dangerous. So if you continue in the stipler number 9, the stipler writes, he has a right from the goin. He says, what does the mechaber want when he writes, you have to be extra careful? So the gross says, look in reish samach beis. What does it say in reish samach beis? V'sham mevur ha-din de-b'choyle tzrich l'ham de-zayn yom. So Zog the stipler... We just mentioned before that the Mechaber writes a bunch of extra words. He writes, you have to be extra careful when it comes to a bris milah. Says the Vilna Gaon, what's he referring to? He's referring to what we learned earlier. What did we learn earlier? We learned earlier that when a baby's sick, you have to wait 7 days. Oh! So the stipler, that's the Vilna Gaon's way of telling us that that he means that you have to be careful and you have to apply the din of Shmuel to this also. Therefore says the stipler that the Vilna Gaon held that according to the Mechaber, again, we pointed out earlier that the simple reading of the Mechaber would be mashma, you don't have to wait 7 days. However, Zok the Vilna Gaon that when the Mechaber added these extra words of tzarech lizor ma'oid, you have to be extra careful, he's referencing the din of Shmuel of waiting 7 days. That's what the stipler says. He writes, Ach yeshoy menor, the kavanas agro, letzayin rak l'ikir adin, shem sim reish tamach leiz, mevor sham dey molim, choylem shum chshash sakana. He says, no, maybe not. Maybe all the Vilna Gaon was telling you is don't give a bris milah to a baby who's sick, but once the baby gets better, then you can do what you want. So then if it's up to stipler, maybe not. Maybe it's not clear what the going wanted. Maybe the going just wanted you to know that you shouldn't be rushing babies to bris until they're actually cured. But if the baby is cured, to wait another 7 days, why do you have to do that? And therefore, Zakta Stipler, it's not clear. And he ends off and he writes over here, Ulefiza ein lanu raya shagra, we have no raya from the going. But he writes, v'shamati, but I heard, shekein pasak ba'or ha-shochav. You don't have to wait 7 days for the blood. You only have to wait 7 days for something like a fever or something that's a choyla kol guf. Okay, so it's definitely a discussion, halacha l'maisa, what to do. Let's go back to the to Mechaber. We mentioned before that the Mechaber threw in an extra line over here. The Mechaber said you have to be very careful with babies that are potentially dangerous because don't do the bris milah if it's a question of danger. Why? Because pikuach nefesh is the most important thing in the world, and you can always do the bris milah later. You can't always do bring back the life. So the kasha the Chassam Sofer is bothered with, many of the achronim are bothered with, is why did the mechaber need that intro? The point should be is that pikuach nefesh beats everything. Why did the mechaber even mention the svara that because you can always do the bris milah later, but you can't always do this later? What does that have to do anything? That's not the nekuda. The nekuda is that we have a rule pikuach nefesh doicha kol tarei kulu. So Chassam Sofer writes a tshuva like this. It's interesting, I was rereading the Chassam Sofer's biography. The Chassam Sofer didn't have children until he was 52 years old. The Chassam Sofer was married to his first wife, they had no children, and then she died. And then he married Rabbi Eger's wife, Rabbi Eger's daughter, and she already had kids from her previous marriage. So the Chassam Sofer, when he first 52 was when he first started having children, then he kind of had a large family. And then there's a whole chapter in the book of how difficult life became for the Chassam Sofer when he was trying to manage a yeshiva, a community, a shul, Paskin Shailos while having children at home. Because until then, he never had kids at home. So Baruch Hashem, he was able to focus solely on the Kehillah and on his Shailos. And then once the kids came, you got to give them baths, you got to do things. Life became a little bit more complicated for the Chassam Sofer. But in any case, the Chassam Sofer ended up having quite a large family, but much, much later on in life, not till he was the age of 52. Okay. So Zok the Chassam Sofer like this. He's bothered with the Kasha of why does the Mechaber, again, it's really, it's a Rambam. So let's call it the Rambam. Why did the Rambam give us a Tesefes beer? That the reason why we delay the Mila is because we could delay a Mila, but you can't bring back a life. That's not the point. The point is because Pikuach Nefesh. So Dr. Chassam Sofer like this. He says, a Gevaldik Svar. He says, V'hine, Peperk Yom HaKippurim Ika Mandi Yalof Pikuach Nefesh Deichas HaShabbos Mi V'shom Rebine Yisrael HaShabbos Laisas Yis HaShabbos Chilo Alav Shabbos Achas Shiyishma Shabbos is Habit. One of the Mekayvis, and we spent a lot of time on this, that we learned the whole din of Pikuach Nefesh is from the fact that it says in the Torah you should guard the Shabbos, and the Gemara makes a drasha that it's kedai to violate one Shabbos, so you should be able to keep more Shabbos. That's what the Gemara said. So Zok Techam Sofer from Meloshin Zeh HaKorah Mashba, from this pasuk it sounds like Davka Kedai Lishma Shabbos is Habit. The only reason why you're allowed to violate Shabbos is in order so you should keep more Shabbos. Meaning we spoke about this in a share. Well, what happens if the guy's going to die? You Hatzalah gets called to the scene, and they know that this guy's not going to make it till next Shabbos. Is it kedai to save him so he can at least do mitzvahs on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? Says the Chassam Sofer, no. You're only allowed to violate one Shabbos as an investment for more Shabbos. But you're not allowed to violate the Shabbos as an investment for other mitzvahs. We mentioned that Ber Halacha quotes him even, who says not like that. The Ber Halacha writes, no. Avada, when the Gemara says we violate the Shabbos, so you should keep more Shabbos, that doesn't just mean the mitzvah of Shabbos. It means so you can keep more mitzvahs. It's kedai to violate the Shabbos, so a person should be able to keep more mitzvahs, not just the mitzvah of Shabbos. So if you save a person on Shabbos and you violate the Shabbos, so he can put on tefillin Sunday morning, that's also kedai. But the Chassam Sofer says not like that. It's a big chiddush. The Chassam Sofer says no. You can only violate the Shabbos if it's going to be an investment for more Shabbos. That's a chiddush.
But what about v'chai b'hem? That would be more inclusive.
Yeah, but that's not this drasha. This drasha is not working with v'chai b'hem. You're right. The Gemara says in Yuma a separate pshat, which we're going to see in a second. The Chassam Sofer is going to deal with. In that pshat in the Gemara, again, if you remember, the Gemara had a bunch of different mekayris for pikuach nefesh. One of them was v'chai b'hem, and the Gemara said that's the best one. V'chai b'hem is the best drasha, but one of the mekayris the Gemara had was this drasha that it's kedai to violate Shabbos, so you should keep more Shabbos. So we mentioned that the shaila that the Achronim deal with is: does that mean only Shabbos to Shabbos? Meaning it's only kedai to violate Shabbos if you're going to keep another Shabbos. But let's say you're not going to keep Shabbos. Let's say the guy is not from, and he has no intention of keeping Shabbos. So then I'm not allowed to violate the Shabbos for him. Or let's say the guy's not going to make it to Shabbos. He's only going to make it till Tuesday. But he'll be alive Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. He'll be able to put on tefillin and make brachas and daven. So the Chassam Sofer is saying, you're saying no. That sound of the Gemara that will mechalal Shabbos Kadesh Yishma Shabbos is Harbe is only if you're going to make it to Shabbos. Again, the Berhalacha quotes the Meiri not like that, and I think many assume not like that. But in Chami, the Chaybahem would talk to be a different drasha with a different halacha. So says the Chasam Sofer, V'loinitin Shabbos Litchas Kadesh Yinich Tefillin Harbe Kadayma. We would not be allowed to violate the Shabbos so you can put on tefillin. It's a fascinating chiddush from the Chasam Sofer. Elo Shabbos Nitche B'mei Shabbos is Harbe. K'dichsev Lasis is a Shabbos. It says to do Shabbos. All other mitzvahs also. I'm allowed to push away one mitzvah, so this exact mitzvah I'll be able to do many times more later. But not so I should be able to do other mitzvahs. But this mitzvah I should be able to do more times. Okay. That's the hakdom that Chasam Sofer gives to answer his kasha. That again, the idea of pikuach nefesh is always an investment. I'm allowed to push away X, so I will later do X many more times. So again, if I'm going to violate something, it has to be as an investment for the future. If this violation that I'm going to do or not do something will only be for something else or a different mitzvah, I'm not allowed to do it. That's Chasam Sofer.
So Rabbi, I'm sure you're going to get to it. So how does that work by mila? You only do it once, or do you look at the mitzvah like you said on the Chakira every single day?
Very good. So that's where the Chasam Sofer is going with mila. Says the Chasam Sofer, Gevaldik. Says the Chasam Sofer, V'hine, Inelev Mizeh Gam Kim, Shepikuach Nevesh Deichem Mila. So says the Chasam Sofer, how's this going to work with Pikuach Nevesh Deichem Mila? I say to myself, I'm not going to do the mila because Pikuach Nevesh wins everything. Why does Pikuach Nefesh win everything? Because we say Pikuach Nefesh is an investment. Zaktach Sam Seifer, Al Korach Gamkin Neim Hachi, you have to say, Sheyidchu Milo Se Alzman, Ma, you'll delay the Milo, Kdeshiyan Nimo B'Shum Pam Koy Mechayo. I make an investment. I say to myself, if I'm going to do the Bris Milo, Bismanoi, the baby might never have a Bris Milo. But if I wait 3 days and do it on the 11th day, I'll know the baby will always have a Milo. Because I'll be better. It's an investment. But if that will never happen, meaning because there's no future of being Moilim later, then why delay it? The reason why I'm allowed to delay it is goofy because I know that I'll invest properly. The whole reason why Pikuach Nefesh wins is not because it's a din Pikuach Nefesh Deicha Kol Tari Kula. Pikuach Nefesh only wins because of the investment element. That I'm allowed to delay something because of the investment in the future. So Dr. Chasam Sofer, I have to know that the investment's going to pan out. I have to know that if I don't do Mila Bismanoi, I'm guaranteed I'll be able to do it on the 11th day. Then I'll have my investment that you'll be gemal for the rest of your life. So therefore, says Dr. Chasam Sofer, that's why the Rambam added this idea that you have to make sure to have it, that I can do it later. This way, if I know I can do it later, so then it's kedai to delay it now because of the investment I'll be able to do it later. Says Dr. Chasam Sofer, there's only one problem. The Rambam doesn't paskin that that's the mekar for pikuach nefesh. Says the Chasam Sofer, El nimsa loisem and amad divrei Rambam muchrochem. El the shas shamasik yishmor mevachay bem. The problem is, after Chasam Sofer, we don't paskin like that man do amar. We don't say that we violate Shabbos because kadesh yishmor Shabbos is harbe. We don't say pikuach nefesh doicha as an investment project. We say because of a chay bem. Vechein haRambam baatzmai perak beis Shabbos. Frank Chasam Sofer, the Rambam himself says that the reason why we violate the Shabbos is because of a Chai Behem. So therefore, Frank Chasam Sofer, this is a beautiful Shekel Torah, if the Rambam would have held like that man Domer and Yuma. The only problem is the Rambam does not hold like that man Domer and Yuma. He actually holds like Shmuel, who says because of a Chai Behem. Okay, it's a nice Shekel Torah.
Does the status the baby is an Aphel during these 30 days, I mean, what is the determination of Harbe? Is it 130, 300, The fact that it's a Nathal that would call into question the longevity of potentially an ability to have the Shabbos and Sarbe, no?
You're right. Again, the assumption is that without knowing otherwise, we would... Well, again, for Bris Mila, it's not going to be Shabbos and Sarbe. It's going to be that we know that this baby, once he gets better, we assume he's going to be able to live a life with a Mila on him, and therefore he's going to be a Gemalt baby, which might be a Raya, which is, I think, where Michael was getting at this. Chasam Sofer might go back to the Beis Halevi's Chakira that the mitzvah is to be continuously Gemalt, and that mitzvah will continue for many years. But the Avnei Nezer brings up an issue that we need to discuss. The Avnei Nezer has another pshat. And the Avnei Nezer quotes the Gemara in Yevamos. He's trying to figure out, the Gemara says that if the baby has eye pain, even though statistically speaking, the baby has a very low level of danger, we don't do the bris mila until the baby gets better. And now the Nezer is somewhat bothered by why. So he says, like a Valdagi said, he writes, Al kochach nirli, the afim godl of the roifim omrim, she'en chshash oid, everyone says, it's fine. Even if you get them godl, ein oisin oimed roifim vade goma. The fact that the doctors estimate it's not good enough. Ach the shuv ein edoich achshash roch against mitzvah smidl. That does not push away the very small percentage chance of danger. Because ein eshchiach hezeko, if it's not common, the hezek, amrim we say shluchim mitzvah in nizokin. Ach she yismach odom al but to rely on a miracle af b'mokim doishich hezeko loy matzinu el bohu b'atzmoy. Says the Abnei Nezer, I'm allowed to put myself into danger under the banner of shluchim mitzvah in nizokin. But I can't put my son's life in danger. I can give myself a bris mila if the doctors tell me you're good to go, even if it's a small percentage of danger, because I'll say shluchim mitzvah in nizokin, I'm good to go. But I have no permission to put my son through that danger. He writes, Ach she yismach, I says, I can only do it for myself. Because he's trying to explain a halach in Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber says that when you have this baby that has the bleeding issue, so it says you have to wait till the baby gets stronger. So the Taz learns you have to wait till the baby becomes a gadol. Can you imagine? According to the Taz, if a baby has a situation where he has a bleeding condition, so the baby can't get a bris till he's 13. Frekta Adenezer, why 13? Zakta Adenezer, because even though the baby recovered already 12 years ago from his blood condition, but since there's a small, small chance of danger, I as a father have no right to subjugate my son to danger. Once he's 13, he can do that to himself. So that Adenezer develops his chiddush that when something is dangerous, you have no right to put someone else in danger. I have no right to put my baby in danger, even though it's a small percentage. He could put himself into danger, but I have no right to give him a bris mila. So therefore, Zakta Abdenezer, that's why you have to wait till the baby turns 13, then the baby can decide on his own. He's a big boy. He can decide to put himself into danger. But I, as a parent, have no permissibility to put my son into danger, even though the numbers are very low. That's Abdenezer's yisoid.
Even though the chiyuv is totally on you?
Very good. That's what I wanted to get to. L'chayv, this Abdenezer should be very much totally in how you look at the chiyuv mila. If the chiyuv mila is on the father, so then it's very fun that the Torah is not allowing the father to fulfill his mitzvah because the baby, which is the chevtz of the mitzvah, he has no right to put into danger. This might go back to the old chakir, which we've spoken about in the past. Is it the baby's mitzvah that the father is acting as his agent? Or is it the father's mitzvah, but the baby's just the chevtz of the mitzvah?
Rabbi, what was the habamina that you could ever put anybody in danger so that you could perform a mitzvah? It's not limited to just mila. What if there are other mitzvahs that you wanted to do, but it would require harming somebody else?
Very good. Right. We spoke about that. If we remember, we spoke about this with the Marsha in Maseches Nedarim. And Masha pointed this out in Maseches Nedarim. The Gemara Nedarim says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to figure out what to do with his son in the Bris Mila, so he said to himself that, what do I do? So he said that if I'm going to give the baby a bris, I'm going to have to delay this. I'm going to have to delay because we won't be able to travel because the baby's going to be in danger. And we mentioned the Masha over there as a kasha, that how would you be allowed to put the baby in danger of a chai behem? So we mentioned that the question is, if the baby is the chevtz shel mitzvah or the baby has the chiv himself. If the baby is merely a chevtz shel mitzvah, but the baby itself doesn't have the chiyuv, so then you're 100% right. But if it's the baby's chiyuv as well, and I'm just acting at his chiyuv, so maybe before there's a din called v'chai behem, maybe I would have to put the baby in danger. So it's mamish totally in whose mitzvah it is. If it would be my mitzvah, I have no right to do my mitzvah and endanger someone else. But if I'm doing your mitzvah, and the Torah says that you're supposed to do it in this situation, so then it would be permissible. But yeah, this Adenezer L'Chayr should be totally in the Chakira of whose mitzvah it is. But I just want to, so if you take, again, it's a Chiddush from the Adenezer, but if you take his Chiddush, how does that play out in our Gemara? So Zark the Adenezer like this. He says, Ach Yesh Loimar, now we can explain this Rambam. The Svirule, the Chshash Choyli, Kigoyin Ke'ev Enoi, let's say eye pain. The Asakon Hu Mishum Tziruf HaKe'ev Ayinim Tzira Mili Stakin. It's a combo. With the eye, with the milo, that's a recipe for disaster. Therefore, im uchshash rochok, if it's a very far-fetched chshash, v'nishal eroifim betach, yoshi yoyim ushayyam hulu, take of the ma'olim, say no problem. Ach shluchim mitzvah in nizokon l'shayach v'milas b'nabi. You can't say that when it comes to your son, because you have no right to put your son even to a small percent of danger. Achim ha'yodua sheke'ev zeh yeh lo'olim, but if you know that this is going to exist forever, kivin sheyagdol yeh mechoyiv lo'mal atzmai, once his baby gets older, he's going to have to do it anyways. Why? Because once he gets older, he follows normal medical procedure, and medical procedure says it's safe to go. So they have a zokta adinezer geshmak. You know why the Rambam says that we don't do the bris milah now? Because right now, as the father, it's a very small chash. But I'm not allowed to put my baby into chash. But since you're telling me now when the baby gets older, the chash will go away. So then when the chash goes away, then he can be able to give himself a bris milah. But given the soif yimo, the yavah, the chash, if you tell me things will be exactly the same when he gets older, so I might as well give him a bris now. The answer is no. When he gets older, things will be much better. He'll be completely better. But if everything would be exactly the same, if the exact same status would be now when he gets 13, so I might as well give the kid the bris milah now. Given the soif soif yavah, the chash, sakana, boiv, and rach. So toiv lo malash, I might as well give him the bris now. Avshi yavah, the chash, sakana, zul, kaim, is milah, bishmini. But now that you tell me that he could do it later on and nothing will be a problem, there'll be zero risk. So Avada, we delay it. So learns the Avnei Nezer. Okay, just interestingly, if you look in the Mechaber number 12, the Mechaber writes, Isha Shemola Ben Arishin, a lady who gave her son a bris, her first son, Umeis, and the baby died. Machmas Mila, because of the Mila. Shechshila Koichai, that the baby got weakened. Umola Gamasheni, and she gave the second baby, Umeis Machmas Mila. Rehusiko Shebenel Meis Machmas Mila. She now established a pattern that her babies die because of Mila. It doesn't matter if it came from more than one husband. Maybe this lady may have three sons from three different husbands. Or Yimishnaim from two different husbands. The third baby has to wait until he gets stronger. To which the Taz holds, you have to wait till the baby becomes 13. Says the Mechaber, V'u'adin, Im ish echad ma'ol b'nei rishan, sheni, u'meis ha'machmas mila, lo yomo ha'shlishi kein, says the Mechaber, it's the same thing as if it's a man. Why do we keep on talking about a woman's kids? Let's say a man would have three boys from three different wives, and he sees that there's a blood issue, so the same halacha. Says the Ramah, no, v'yesh chokim. V'sviru de'loi shaykh b'ish rak b'isha. Zok the Ramah, no, not true. This genetic bleeding issue is only in the mother's kids. If the father has it, doesn't count. Why not? Zok the Gain. That was David's diak. From the Gemara keeps on talking about the lady. Why the lady? The Teres is because this genetic bleeding issue is only a problem if it's in the mother. Now the Kash is why? Zok the Goyin, because the Gemara says in Nida that there's three people make a baby. Mom, Dad, and Hashem. So the Gemara says, where does the blood come from? It comes from the wife. Oh, Zok the Vilna Goyin. So if the bleeding comes from the wife, so any bleeding disorders should follow mom's genes, not dad's genes. Male Zok the Goyin, that's Pshat in the Ramah, where the Ramah holds that any bleeding-related deficiencies go by the mom and not by the dad. So therefore, Zok the Goyin, that's why the Ramah holds that it doesn't help that.
If the baby has the blood disease, what's the difference where it came from?
No, but we don't know yet. You haven't established a pattern unless you know it, that this comes because of the mother's. Again, you can't. He's talking about a case where if you have a father that has three babies, and two babies, and two of them already had the blood deficiency. So it says the Ramah, it doesn't mean anything. It's got to come from there has to all be the same mother. Now again, today we have genetic testing for all this. What?
You fall into at least something.
That's what he writes at the end. He says, "Veneer the suffering the fashas lahako." But Lechayra, today we have genetic testing for all this, and we would know exactly who it comes from. It's just an interesting idea that I thought was somewhat interesting. Now, there's more to talk about over here, but I really want to start the next sugya. So we're gonna leave out the Tosis and Chulin, Marshon and Chulin, all fascinating stuff. But because I want to get moving, I want to move on to a different issue. We all know that this Gemara keeps on talking about the mother. So the question is, let's now start to talk about mother's status in Bris Milah. Where is women's role in the Bris Milah? So we have to go back to the Gemara in Kedushin number 17. The Gemara in Kedushin tells us that a father is mechuyav to give his son a Bris Milah. Zok the Gemara, l'moyloi minolam. How do you know a father has to give his son a Bris Milah? The Chassid says in the Pasuk, v'yimol Avram esizok b'noi. Avram Avinu gave a Bris to his son Yitzchak. Zok the Gemara, v'hecha d'loi molu avua. And when the father does not step up to the plate to do his chiyav, Bezdin has to give a bris. It says in the pasuk, "Himo lachem kol zachar." You should give a bris to all baby boys. Talk to Gemara v'hechad leimo beidina. And if the bezdin never did it, mechayve ihu lememloi nafshe. He needs to give himself a bris mila. It says in the pasuk, "V'arul zachar shaliyim as b'sar lasay." Fine. So we have three levels. Dad has to give a son a bris. Bezdin has to give a son a bris. and the son has to give himself a bris. Frag the Gemara, ihi minolon deloy mechayve. How do you know mom doesn't have to give a bris? The chsiv, because it says in the pasuk, kashativay oisoy elikim, like Hashem commanded him, oisoy veloy osa, him and not her. Therefore, zog the Gemara, this is the makar, that mom has no obligation to give her son a bris meal. Okay, but the big shell that I want to get into is, does mom have no chiv to give her son a bris as a parent? But what about a chiv al bezdin? Maybe mom should be mechuyev to give her son a bris, not as a parent, but as the second din, bezdin. Now, in order for that to be true, you have to assume that when the Gemara says bezdin, it doesn't merely mean bezdin. It means anyone. If bezdin means just bezdin, obviously a lady is not part of bezdin. But is that true? When the Gemara says that it's bezdin, does that mean an informal bezdin? It means, you know, the bezdin of the OU, the bezdin of the whatever? Or it means every single Jew, and bezdin is just a fancy way of saying some form of a system. So this l'chayra is a big machloikis rishayim.
But Rabbi, I'm sorry, I don't understand. Are we asking, is the mother mechuyev to reach out to bezdin? Or is bezdin mechuyev to reach out to the woman?
No, I want to suggest that maybe a mother might be mechuyev to give her son a bris, not as a parent, but as the din that when let's say, for example, you have a couple where the husband is not doing the bris milah. So the wife says to herself, okay, so I'm going to do it. What do you mean, I'm not mechuyev? The answer is yes, you are. Because the Gemara says that when the father doesn't do it, bezdin is mechuyev, and maybe bezdin means every Jew.
Don't we hold that arbus in all mitzvahs? Right? We have the concept of that's why you're able to be yotzei other people.
Arbus doesn't... Well, again, Arvis doesn't necessarily create a chiv. Arvis means I can. Here we're saying there's a chiv. Here you might have to go out of your way. If you know of a kid down the block that doesn't have a bris milah, you got to go give him a bris milah. Now, if bezdin means just bezdin, so my shiloh never gets off the ground, because a lady is not part of bezdin. But if bezdin can mean every Jew, so maybe a lady should be mechuyev to give her son a bris, not as parental chiv, but as the chiv of bezdin. Now, if you look in the Rambam, in Hilchos Milah number 18, the Rambam writes like this. Over ha'av ha'odlam v'loy moloi son, if the father did not give a bris, or the master did not give a bris to his slave, bitel mitzvah saseh. He was mevatel mitzvah. Ve'ena chayiv karis, he doesn't get karis. She'ena karis toloy ela ba'oral atzmoy. Fine, we spoke a lot about that. U'bezdin mitzuvin lo moloi say ha'ben ha'oyo ha'evet. So, to the Rambam, and bezdin's mechoyev. So the mashmois of the Rambam would be that what? It's a din in bezdin. That this din in the Gemara, the Gemara said if the father doesn't do it, bezdin has to do it, it means bezdin, kipshutai. So if you're not part of bezdin, you have no chiv. However, the Rambam Pirusha Mishnayis is mashma not like that. The Rambam Pirusha Mishnayis writes, ukishiyagdil hayelid v'yagil azman achiv ha-mitzvah, when the child becomes 13, and now he's the begedim mitzvah, nifter kol ha'odom mimilosim. All people are potter from his milah. Now he's chayiv to do his own bris milah. What do you mean? Who's nifter kol adam? What do you mean all people? So the mashmois of the Mishnah Mishnayis is that all people, meaning we all as individuals, would have been mechoyiv al bezdin, but the moment he becomes 13, now he's on his own. So it might be a shtickle steer in Rambam. That the Rambam Pirusha Mishnayis sounds like nifter kol adam means all of us would have been mechoyiv to give this kid a bris al bezdin. And now that he turns 13, now our chiyuv falls off. So it might be a machoikis rishon. The Rosh and Chulin is very clear. The Russian Chulin writes, "V'cheno av shechayv lo molas benoy. If a father has mechayv to give his son a bris, v'rotzal lemoyla, he wants to do it. V'kodem acher, and someone else beats him to it. Chayv, you got to pay the penalty for stealing a mitzvah." Dr. Rush, avol emeino av rotzal lemoyloi. But if the father has no interest in giving his son a bris, kol Yisrael chayov in the moyloi. All Jewish people have to give him a bris. So the Rush is mefurish. The Russian Chulin says that kol Yisrael chayov in the moyloi. So we have machloekis rishonim on our hands as to whether or not the din of milas bezdin is that a din on all of Klal Yisrael? That's only a din in bezdin. So if you assume like the Rosh and Chul, like the Rambam Pesha Mishnayis, I want to know, is it shaykh to say that an isha, although she's excluded from the mitzvah of mila, als the mitzvah of parent, maybe she's mechuyev als bezdin? So when we go back to our Gemara, the Gemara keeps talking about the mother did the bris. Maybe Taka, the mother had a chiyuv to do the bris. Maybe she had a chiv to the bris, not as a mother, but as a bezdin. Because every Jew has to make sure that a baby has a bris milah. Now, l'chayrud is a raya from Ritva in Kedusha number 21. The Ritva is bothered with the famous kasha of Chavtas Amalaf, which we've spoken about in the past. The Gemara wants to know, why do I need a special exerus of kasav to exempt women from their obligation to give the kid a bris? Isn't it Mila Mitzvah Sei Shazman Gromo? If you want to know why women are part of Emilia and the kids are Bris Mila, it's not because it says Oisoi V'lo Yosa. Says for Taitzvis, for all the Rishonim and Kedushin Avchav Tes, the reason why mothers don't have to give the kids a bris is because it's a mitzvah to say Shazman Gromo. So Frek Taitz, the Ritva number 21.
Why is it a mitzvah? It's a lifetime mitzvah. No time. You have to be brisked your whole life.
Well, again, if you look at the mitzvah, that you can't do the mitzvah before the eighth day, so that makes it a time sensitive mitzvah. Now, we've spoken at length about it. When exactly. Again, if you hold like the Shachta, but the you can get the mitzvah done before the 8th day, so it's no longer time sensitive, maybe. But Taisus asks it that again, there's a couple ways you can ask it, but one way to ask it is you can't do the bris before the 8th day. So Taisus says, well, after the 8th day, there's no Zman. So, Ein Echanami, there's a time before, but there's no time after. So we spoke about that. Why does that make a difference? We spoke at length. Michael, look up what number Shir we spoke about this. I definitely do not remember, but we spoke about this topic. So, Frank the Ritva. Number 21, Frank Ritva, why do I need a pasuk? Typically, the mitzvah says Shazman Grami. He goes a different angle. The Mila b'yoyim v'loy b'layla. He doesn't go the angle of eighth day. He goes the angle of night. Since you can't do a bris mila at night, the mela, bris milas are automatically time sensitive. Okay. And for the Ritva, ikel meimar, the hasam hu b'mitzvah dinav shei. When do we say the rule of mitzvah says Shazman Grami women apart? That's when it's their mitzvah. Avol hacha b'mitzvah d'benoy. Over here, she's doing his mitzvah. That's a lomus we spoke about also. She's doing his mitzvah. Hava amina de mechayve. I would think she's mechoyev. De loigara mi bezdin de mechayve le mamle. She should be no different than bezdin. So the Ritva is saying a big lomus over here. The Ritva is saying is that maybe the mitzvah of mila on a parent is not that I have a chiev to do bris mila. It's I have a chiev to act on your mitzvah. This is something we mamash keep on talking about. When the father has a chiv to give his son a bris mila, is the pshat that the father has a mitzvah to do his own mitzvah, or the father has a mitzvah to fulfill the son's mitzvah? Zog de Ritva, I would have thought that when the mother is giving the son a bris mila, the mother is the same thing as Bezdin. Bezdin doesn't have an independent mitzvah. Bezdin has a mitzvah to make sure the son does his mitzvah. So Zog de Ritva, I would have thought that a mother maybe is the same thing. That when a parent gives a child a bris mila, the parent is not doing his own mitzvah. The parent is doing his obligations to ensure that his son has a bris mila. So Dr. Ritva, I would think it's no different than Bezdin. So now, what's the Kamash Malon? So the Havamina is Dr. Ritva, as I would have thought that a mother can function like a Bezdin. That a mother's acting like a Bezdin. So Kamash Malon what? That no. That Oisiv Eloyasa teaches me what? That even as a Bezdin, a woman is exempt? Or Kamash Malon Oisiv Eloyasa, that's not the Lomdus Bechlal. It's a whole different Lomdus. It's not clear. The Ritva is suggesting a possibility that a mother would have been able to fulfill the role and give a kid a bris mila als Bezdin. Because maybe that's her whole obligation, like a Bezdin, to ensure her son gets the outcome. Kamash Mulan, she's out of that. Now, where does that leave us on the Lumdus? Is the Kamash Mulan that she can't be Bezdin? Or the Kamash Mulan is that's not the Lumdus? Or the Kamash Mulan, it's not clear. But the Ritva does have this possibility that when the mother, or for that matter, even the father, when he gives a kid a bris, he might be acting merely as an agent to fulfill the son's mitzvah. The Sefer HaMakne, also known as the Hafla, he writes Mefurish. He writes that when the mother was excluded from Bris Mila, the mother was only excluded as her parental obligation. But as a Bezdin, she's still in the Parsha. So not the Sefer HaMakne number 20, probably it's called the Sefer HaMikne. It's based on the Pasuk Navi, V'ekach HaSefer HaMikne. Right? We read that on in Megillas Rus. So people call it the Sefer HaMakne. It probably should be called the Sefer HaMikne. But in any case, in number 22, he writes this: L'chayre mashma di isha ein b'chal mitzvah mila klal. The simple reading of the Gemara is that women are totally, completely removed from the parsha. Elo the tzarachin, kiven de be'emes ikat treikra frak the mikne. There's really two pesukim. Chad lechiv kol yisrael mikra de himo lachem kol zachar kanal. There's one pasuk that all of Bezdin has a chiv to give a bris. Chad lechiv av ala ben, and then there's one for a parental obligation. Im kain zok de mikne nihi de miyata teira gabechiv av ala ben oisiv loyosa. When we excluded women, we excluded them from their parental obligation. Hainu de enem uchiyev is yoisim mikol yisrael kmai av. Avo bikra de himo lachem kol zachar. But when it came to the pasuk of Kol Zachar, the loikse be miuta, the meilo ishanami bas chiyuvahi, she still is obligated. Now, zok the sefer mitzvahs like Rambam number 23, zok the Rambam, vein isha be mitzvah lomol es bina. A lady has no mitzvah to give a bris mila to her son, kimoi shaha av mitzvah. Like the father is obligated. What's the dig from the Rambam? that in the world of parental obligations, a lady does not carry the same parental obligation as a father. But maybe she carries an obligation as like any other Jew. So l'cheir, one perhaps can make a dig from the Rambam and Sefer HaMitzvahs that a mother, although she's excluded from her parental obligation, she might be still mechuyev in her bezdin obligation. Now, this is all going to be very negeya, because if you hold that a mother is mechuyev al bezdin, we're going to run into a fundamental problem. How can you have a chiyev to do something that you can't do? If you hold a lady can't perform a bris milah, so how can the Torah make a lady mechuyev in something which she can't do? Now you'll tell me, no problem. She can't do the bris milah, so she'll hire someone. Problem is, we have a rule, any mitzvah which you can't do, you can't hire a messenger. So now we just tied our hands. We told the lady that you're mechuyev al bezdin to make sure every kid has a bris milah, but you have no way of actually doing it. How's that going to work? So Blina, the next week, we'll delve into the sugya in Avodah Zarah with Tosfos over there about the lumdus, about whether or not a woman has a chiyuv milah, can she perform a milah, and is there a way for her to send a shliach to do the bris if she herself can't perform the bris milah? Okay. Mitzvah Shem, we'll get to that next Sunday. Okay. Have a wonderful weekend. Take care. Be well.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Take care, everyone.
Okay, bye-bye.
Did you know?